Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. And as you know, this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions of what we need to do to get our government back, to get the federal governments and all public servants behaving and acting within the framework of the Constitution, and getting them to stop going beyond and breaking those barriers on that parchment. As you know, this show is also sponsored by republicreview.org. And as I always tell you, it is now or never. Now, I've kind of been going on and on and on about this Constitution. And one of the things, obviously, since it's been Constitution Day, we wanted to make sure we covered the depth of the Constitution. And so hopefully this actually provides you with a solid foundation of understanding all the different parts, all the different roles, responsibilities, powers, and properties that have been delegated to the federal government, because that's exactly what the Constitution is. There are parts of the Constitution that actually constrains the states from being able to do things. We covered that as well. And so in understanding this thing we call the Constitution for the United States, we want you to understand that by adhering to it, by demanding adherence, by citizens, you, demanding that your public servants behave, that your public servants only support and operate within that Constitution, in other words, fully comply to the Constitution and their constitutional oath. What this does, folks, is this actually engages the immune system. And believe it or not, does your immune system work? I mean, when you get exposed, I mean, if you get cut and the skin starts turning red and pussy because it's a pretty nasty and dirty cut or what have you, does your immune system work? Most people's immune systems work because they, you know, have a natural immune system. Our Constitution has a natural immune system. And I do not believe that regardless of how corrupted and how constrained and how perverted our government has gotten, it doesn't mean that the immune system won't work. You have to engage as the integral part. You are an integral part of the immune system. And so we have, you know, we've moved ourselves because we've allowed to move ourselves towards a democracy. Don't complain about a democratic form of government that is operating in this party form of government. Don't complain about it. If you're demanding that your Second Amendment rights be protected instead of all of your constitutional rights being protected, because you're a part of the problem. It's that simple. If you want to actually enjoy all of your liberties, including the ones that you've cherry-picked, you have to back out and demand full compliance of the Constitution. Because as we have gone asunder, as we have gone out into the farthest reaches that a government could probably safely go without collapsing yet, we are at that point that we are going to collapse unless we step back and demand full compliance. And it's that, you will be amazed. I'm here to tell you that our Creator will perform the exact same forms of miracles. If not, to me, this will be a greater miracle than what he did in establishing, actually, let me back up, what he did in the Declaration of Independence, what he did in the Revolutionary War, and everything that evolved into this Constitution in creating this new government. There's no doubt in my mind what he can do and what he will do. It's only if we have the faith and we act upon it. Period. It's that simple. So before we get into the Constitution and the repealing of the prohibition that we were just talking about in our previous episode, Let me just remind you that you still have some time to throw a contribution, a financial contribution, towards Paul Venables' campaign for the U.S. Senate in the state of Missouri. Go to You Win Missouri. Just search for Paul Venable or You Win Missouri, and you will find Paul Venables' online presence where you can actually send him some love. As you know, we've got a lot of things that we're trying to do, but I want to get back into bringing some people in between now and the end of the year, like Paul Nally. I need to get back with him, and he's a good man. Probably a far better man than I, because obviously, I told him I'd get back to him a lot sooner than what I thought, and it hasn't panned out. Not because I don't want to get back to him, it's just because we're constantly being interrupted with this next challenge, the next thing to do, and or other things. And it's not that he's not important, it's just that priorities haven't gotten to the ability to where I can actually do that. But I'm hoping to get back to that. I'm hoping to get back to Michelle Bachmann after this election. I'm hoping to get back with a few other people to find out where we are regarding, their activities. Maybe some of these people like Timber Nation and so forth. All that being said, one of the things that I talked about, and I talked about enlightenment a bit. What about endarkenment? There's no such word, but it's the opposite of enlightenment. So an enlightened society disciplines itself and constrains itself from engaging or allowing certain behavior to become acceptable. Disciplining, in other words, behavior of pleasures of the moment. I mean, it's not that you can't be happy, but you have to be constrained, because if we become consumed, like gambling, like prostitution, like drugs and those types of things, then that behavior is absolutely destructive. Same thing with any type of addictive behavior. Sex, pornography, all of those types of things are destructive. So an enlightened society applies discipline to say, we know how destructive those things are, and we want to eliminate those, and we can. We can create laws that eliminate the production, the sale, the presence of pornography. As a matter of fact, in the 90s, I don't know if you knew this, but in the 90s, they had the ability to remove what we would call from the standard internet, remove all pornography from the standard internet by actually, instead of having a .com or .org, they would have a .xxx. So in other words, anybody that utilizes any type of pornographic material, regardless of its degree, like soft porn, what have you, then, and or that type of graphic, I mean, sometimes things got XXX because of its violence and the gratuitous, violence that it portrayed. And so they have the ability of having a .xxx extension. Why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do it so that everybody could actually protect themselves and say, hey, if that would have happened, Facebook would have then been forced, or Twitter actually, because Facebook is not necessarily as pornographic as Twitter is. I mean, Twitter, I've had many friends tell me how they've had problems with the pornography on Twitter. And so Twitter should have actually been redesignated instead of Twitter.com to Twitter.xxx, period. And then that would have forced Twitter to say, either we be legitimate and remove that, because by creating a separate domain, and it's actually not a domain, it's, an internet, a domain is your domain under .com, .org, or what have you. And I don't know what the technical term is, and I know there's somebody out there that's already finishing the sentence. But having that designator for that type of internet presence, .xxx, would have cleaned up the internet. like that. I mean, that was a snap of my fingers ways away from the microphone. Here's the point, folks, is that there was only one entity that thought that that would have been a travesty for what they are trying to do, and that's Satan. Satan wants us to have this commingling of this pornographic material, this insidious type of, you know, content. And it's the same thing with gambling. Gambling should not be a .com either. If we as an enlightened society recognize that these things are dangerous, then we need to actually label them as dangerous. But who goes around today saying gambling is dangerous, gambling is bad? I mean, today, those are the real radicals. But 20, 30, 40 years ago, lotteries and gambling was considered a taboo. It was a pathway of addiction to where a person could destroy themselves. You couldn't even get a clearance in the military or in the intelligence community if you gambled. So if you gambled, and I would even presume that if you were partaking in pornography and those types of things, they probably would have questioned your clearance as well, way back in the 70s or the 80s time frame. So my point is that we have this opportunity to actually work and start moving our society towards enlightenment. And every time we've had the opportunities, we've actually failed. We have failed society. And in so many different ways. I'll be back with this as soon as we come back from the break so that we can wrap this up and get back into the Constitution. I'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as we have the opportunity, I just want to prove, because we constantly see this all the time, and it seems like it spans all the cultures and all of the, if you want to call them the diversity, the different groups, races and so forth, genders. It seems like every type of demographic has been, I'll just say, infiltrated and has been led by influencers and cultural influences to actually create this endarkenment, So this is a new term, a word I'm making up here, but it seems like we are in the grasp of not realizing we're hugging and clinging on to a very destructive energy. And so logic, this defies logic, this defies reason, this defies all things that, you know, would actually be supportable, or I should say sustainable. And there's a fire word, right? Sustainability. But it just seems to defy life itself. I mean, if you do things that are destructive, that will end up killing you, making you suffer, those types of things, then it is antithetical to your existence. It is antithetical to, you know, to propelling yourself as long as you possibly can and being as productive as you possibly can. I mean, this is the ultimate in destructive behavior. And so as I look at the different cultures, it just seems like every culture out there is embracing, you know, these very dangerous things. How far, how low can we go? And we're getting much lower and lower and lower because we have to be tolerant, and that has to change. We have to be disciplined. That is the term that we have to start embracing for enlightenment. We need to start applying some self-discipline is important. And when somebody says, well, I want to do this, and go, well, you know, self-discipline would get you further down the road in life than what you are talking about, the practices you are seeking to do, your gambling, whatever your addictions are, drugs, it doesn't matter. Self-discipline, my friends, that is the path, and that is a principle of enlightenment we need to get back to. Now, the 21st Amendment, which basically repeals the 18th Amendment, right? The 18th article of Amendment to the Constitution is hereby repealed. Section 2, the transportation or importation into any state, territory, or possession of the United States for delivery or use therein of intoxicating liquors in violation of the laws thereof is hereby prohibited. In other words, I'm going to read this again. What are they really saying here? The transportation or importation into any state, territory, or possession of the United States for delivery or use therein of intoxicating liquors in violation of the laws thereof is hereby prohibited. Now, does that make sense to you? In other words, in violation of the laws is hereby prohibited. It almost sounds like they're still kind of trying to enforce these laws, that they're still going to have some level of enforcement. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by conventions in the several states as provided in the Constitution within the 7 years from the date of the submission of the states by the Congress. Now, my point is this, folks, that when they created this amendment for prohibition, it grew government and government's enforcements unconstitutionally, because nowhere, and I go back to this, nowhere in the 18th Amendment did they grant anywhere where the federal government could enforce this law at all. Nowhere did they have the ability to create their own enforcement army to go out and make sure that this was being adhered to, which is the danger of trying to create this type of policing action. All that does is it facilitates a synergy between organized crime and organized enforcement. Believe it or not, that's all it does. So if you don't, if we actually use enlightenment, and had they used enlightenment, the reason why prohibition became such a problem is because we this is an indictment of how America was starting to move away from, you know, its humble origins, its religious positions, because you got to remember the framers. Alcohol was a staple, and even though there were people that were, you know, drinking excessively and so forth, that'll always be the case. The way to get out of that is by discipline and enlightenment, by helping people start to understand. And so, because 9 times out of 10, people that get they start destroying themselves. If you actually use the right methods of love, education, and discipline, you will actually learn how to rid your society of these types of things. Do you ever wonder how Enoch was able to get his people and that city to become such valiant followers of God's laws? How? How did he do that? It was enlightenment that they used. They embraced these concepts that they were taught of discipline and obedience and those types of things. So getting back to, you know, this repealing of the 18th Amendment, I just want to let you know that 14 years later, when the federal government created this monster called the FBI, the ATF, and all of these things, what they didn't do was they didn't dismantle them because it was repealed. Why? Oh, well, these people had jobs. They didn't want to lay people. The government never lays people off. When it came down to this complete misinterpretation, language that doesn't exist in the Constitution, that any federal employee has a right to their job. It becomes their property. Do you have a right to your job? Do you have a right to, I mean, is your job your property that your employer cannot take from you? That's insane that we've actually allowed. And this all came from the 1803 Marbury v. Madison, that one ruling where through the opinions of John Marshall, who had no legal ability to actually create any of these paradigms, that's how we got to where we are today. So, the 22nd Amendment. No person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term, to which some other person was elected president, shall be elected to the office of president more than once. So, in other words, if Trump was put into office in 2023, that would not count as a term. If we actually executed the 12th Amendment and got rid of Biden in 2023, then folks, then Trump would actually be eligible for re-election in 2024. What do you think about that? And then we wouldn't have to suffer 2 more years. The problem I have with Trump is the fact that he's doing nothing to get into office in 2023. He's doing nothing to move the 12th Amendment forward in getting Congress to do their job. I see more reckless behavior, the potential calling of a constitutional convention, as more of a threat. And it seems like he's doing nothing. America deserves better than a president that only cares about control and not about your suffering, not about the tyranny that we have to endure. A president that wants to liberate America is the president that we need. If you need a tyrant, you'll get a tyrant. Anyway, let me get back to this. But this article shall not apply to any person holding the office of president when this article was proposed by the Congress, and shall not prevent any person who may be holding the office of the president or acting as president during the term within which this article becomes operative becomes operative from holding the office of president or acting as president during the remainder of such terms. In other words, this is like, we're not happy with the fact that we've got FDR, but this isn't to say we don't like FDR. It's kind of like very childish. What's wrong with basically saying, okay, so it doesn't matter? And I think that the reason they didn't say that is that they didn't want this amendment to not be ratified. They recognized that we do need to keep kind of a term limits on presidents, because it was obvious the presidents, perpetual presidents, could become very monarchical and exercising all sorts of powers, like what FDR was doing, trying to basically stack the courts and all these other things. That was pure tyranny. We'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
All right, so let's just kind of move a little bit forward on this whole concept that here was Congress kind of stepping in and saying, we don't think it's a good idea. But they had to play nice because they knew that if it came out to that they were really trying to get rid of FDR, which they should have. They should have, but they didn't. Why didn't they impeach him? Why did Congress not impeach him for some of the crap he was doing? He was violating the Constitution left and right, his programs and everything else. Why? Ah, folks, it's pretty easy. They didn't understand. They were already indoctrinated into big government. Big government on the Republican side took over decades before. Big government throughout both parties took place decades before. So there was no one, and they didn't have America didn't have the access to the truth. And what I mean by that is you really had to go and find in libraries, and the Library of Congress wasn't, you know, it's not like it was a hands-off type of thing, but it was an arduous task to go in there and to start doing that research in hard copy form. It's almost like finding a needle in the haystack. It wasn't until we started getting algorithms with search engines and you know, web indexing and all of these other things that makes life so much easier for us today to finding the truth. You can't tell, even though we see evil directly attached to technology today, we also see the divine hand of providence in how helpful and how instrumental these capabilities are in the right hands. In the wrong hands, they become very dangerous. They become very oppressive and tyrannical. Anyway, section 2. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of the submission by Congress. And so here we now have a second amendment that came up with, again, so just so you understand, the first time was the time in basically trying to deal with FDR and the potential death of FDR, that they would be able to, you know, seize these different controls. Now, the second time was the following amendment, the 32nd Amendment, which literally gave them this power to actually... This is the third time, because the second time was in the repealing of the prohibition. In other words, they started putting in these sunset clauses that this amendment can only be ratified within 7 years. If it's not ratified within 7 years, it becomes an unratified amendment. And so based on the overall process, when we look at some of the other amendments, like what Coolidge did, that was just a wide open amendment out there that was actually hard rejected by the states. In other words, they got enough states to step forward and say, we're never going to let you regulate child labor. And yet today they do. So going into the 23rd Amendment, the 23rd Amendment, this is about creating the District of Columbia as a entity. And so here's the problem with this amendment. If you read Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 16, that Congress shall have the power for exclusive legislation over the such district of the District of Columbia. Now let's read this. The district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall appoint in such manner as the Congress may direct a number of electors of president and vice president equal to the whole number of senators and representatives in Congress to which the district would be entitled if it were a state, but in no event more than the least populous state. They shall be in addition to those appointed by the states, but they shall be considered for the purpose of the election of president and vice president to be electors appointed by a state, and they shall meet in the district and perform such duties as provided by the 12th article of the amendment. And so, you know, we go on and on about the 12th Amendment, right? But what this does is it gives the District of Columbia the ability to have representation in the choosing of the presidents. This is a huge mistake. The District of Columbia should not, because when you live in the district, you basically are living in no man's land. You do not deserve representation. If you want to be there and you want to make money, sorry, the District of Columbia is strictly the seat of government. It cannot be a state, cannot be considered equal to a state, and it cannot have the same kind of representation, period. Whether you like it or not, you know, people that move there, that comes with the consequences. It's kind of like, hey, you choose to go down the path of homosexuality. Well, the consequence of that is you can't have kids. So there are consequences when we make decisions. An enlightened society acknowledges the consequences and makes sure that those consequences are defended. In other words, you don't allow yourself, because you actually create an endarkenment, or you endarken society, not enlighten society, when you actually start removing the consequences from people's decisions and behavior. In other words, you start enabling people and giving them things that they should not have been able to have. Sorry, you should not be able to have children. You should not be able to have these things because, you know, you destroyed your liver, and I'm sorry. That was a personal behavior. You have to live with those consequences. That's what a disciplined society would do. Now, a disciplined society doesn't mean that it can't be compassionate, that, you know, if you have the money and you want to be able to, you know, find somebody that will sell you their liver in the case of their death or what have you, then okay. I mean, by going down, I don't want to call it black market, but bottom line, this is not a place where government should be actually saying we're going to bypass the consequences. Government shouldn't even be playing in these things, period. They should be actually supporting the discipline. It is society, you at the local level, that should be creating the laws necessary to ensuring the proper discipline. This is why abortion laws need to be reapplied at the county level. And let the counties, because people say it's a state issue. I say it's a county issue. Because just because, why is it that the states or a population center can inflict and mandate that you can, you know, you have to provide abortions in your county when nobody in your county believes that that's morally right? The majority of people in your county feel otherwise. This is called tyranny by the majority. And it is antithetical to the design of our constitutional republic. Anyway, so back to the 33rd article. The Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. That's the final little section there. All right, so the 24th Amendment. So the 24th Amendment is, and this was proposed in 1962 and ratified in 1964. So let me tell you what the 24th Amendment is not. And this is ironic, folks. The 14th Amendment ratified almost a century earlier, actually hit the nails on the head of what needed to happen. And so the 24th Amendment changes the rights of the citizens. But so what else happened at this point in time in 1964? The Civil Rights Act. So they created a Civil Rights Act in 1866, and then they created another Civil Rights Act in 1864. However, in 1866, they realized that the Civil Rights Act would not be constitutional, so they created the 14th Amendment, and they ratified the 14th Amendment. And that's how they galvanized the protections for all freemen and all citizens. All citizens could be guaranteed and enjoy the privileges and immunities guaranteed by that U.S. Constitution. Now, in 1964, we see an amendment being proposed. Actually, it's 1962. So we're seeing a century later an amendment being proposed, and it's not what you think it is. Why is it not what we think it is? The right of the citizens, this is what it is, Section 1. The right of the citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice president, for electors for president or vice president, or for senator, or for representatives of Congress shall not be denied or abridged by the United States, by any state, or by any reason of failure to pay any poll tax or other tax. Okay, so this right here did away with the ability of states, because states were still a century later. The southern states, who were, as Andrew Johnson said, they were behaving perfectly. Everybody was getting their fair shake. And still we had to have another amendment to come in and set things right. So how many amendments does that make? Well, we have the 13th Amendment, the second 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment, right? So anyway, We're going into a break. We'll be right back after these two messages.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
So what we ended up doing was we actually pointed out that we've got four amendments now. Four amendments to rectify what should never have happened. And as a matter of fact, it would never have gotten this way had we actually not made that compromise on August 22nd during the Constitutional Convention. Folks, the majority of the delegates, had they not put the union first, had they sent the message to the Carolinas and Georgia on August 22nd during the Constitutional Convention that we were going to free all slaves in the Union, then it would have changed everything. However, the blood is on the hands of those men that demanded, and those people who demanded the support and the continuance of the institution of slavery in America. So let's not be, you know, America was, you know, racist. America was a slave nation. There were three states that did this. Three. And so, you know, every state makes a mistake. I mean, the state of Washington passed a law to legalize abortion in 1971. And I'm going, are you kidding me? It's the same thing with legalizing homosexual marriage. Are you kidding me? These things are antithetical to our Constitution and to the principles and mores of a good, enlightened society. But nevertheless, as things went on, I mean, we have to understand that it wasn't all of America. It was a bad decision, a political decision to maintain the Union. I believe that it was a mistake. I believe that they should have said, pack your bags, we're moving forward. You can stay where you are, but when you're ready to move forward, we will be here for you. Because, folks, just to the south of Georgia was this little nation called Spain, who was actually a saber rattler and a maniacal player in politics, in world and government politics at the time. And look at the wake of destruction that they left behind them in Portugal, south of us. There were people that were hungry for liberty throughout the world, more so in Central and Latin America and South America than anywhere else. So, because they were living literally under an imported tyrannical government. So, okay, so here we are. We're at this crux, and now we see in the Constitution four amendments, because people said, oh, the South was behaving good. I'm sorry. I didn't buy that. I don't buy that. And I believe that, as Thomas Sowell points out in his book, Black Rednecks and White Liberals, you really need to read that book, that slavery didn't beget racism, but racism was a byproduct of slavery. So when we look at this, you know, this whole thing between blacks and whites and slavery in America, we're carrying the baggage that we don't need to carry. There are those that actually should be carrying it, and that's it. And that is it. And the fact of the matter is this concept of reparations, the divine hand of providence made it clear that there will never be a point in time where reparations and or compensation can ever be justified. Only in those types of things where government actually itself took that property. In other words, if they confiscate property, they can only do that if somebody is justly compensated, period. That's it. That's the only time that there's been these kinds of constraints. As I go through this Constitution, it becomes really clear that the federal government isn't here to try to equal the playing field. They were here to make sure that all people enjoyed the privileges and immunities, all citizens. There was one little outlier that still had never been addressed. And it is still the elephant in the room when it comes down to the people of America who have yet to actually get recognized and to be told, you are citizens in this republic. And those are the Native Americans, the Indians in America. They are citizens. Now, if they want to, you know, renounce their citizenship and go somewhere else, that's up to them. But when one tribe took over another tribe under their own laws, under their own behavior and how they acted historically, when one tribe took over the land of another, they became subjugated and they became incorporated into that tribe, or they were wiped out, whatever they wanted to do. And if you look at Portugal and Spain to the south, that's what they were doing. They were wiping them out and or subjugating them. And so, and they followed the same paths that what ancient Rome did. You know, you go in and you kill some people and you put their heads on a stick, and then people go, oh my heavens, that's terrible. And they don't want their heads on a stick, so they start behaving because they realize they have been subjugated. I'm telling you this not as a historical point of framework, but I am telling you this as a future framework. When we become subjugated, when they come for us and they say, we are now seizing control, they're going to be putting heads on sticks. They're going to be taking people away, and it's up to you how you behave. It's up to you as to what you do. So let's move on, because here we actually had the ending of the poll taxes. Up to this point, there were some states that were requiring some people to have to pay to be able to vote. And so the practice of that ended right here. Now, the 25th Amendment, which is very, you know, this becomes, let me see how much time. We have about 4 minutes. So the 25th Amendment is a long one. And the 25th Amendment was proposed in 1965 and ratified in 1967. And this all talks about the competencies and the health and so forth of the President of the United States. Now, who was president at the time? Lyndon B. Johnson. And when we look at, and who was elected in 1968? Nixon. Now, Nixon didn't have a lot of health problems, but were we not aware of the fact that maybe Lyndon B. Johnson probably had some health problems or had some questions regarding his sanity? Because this amendment speaks to the fact that Congress was looking and saying, you know, we need to have a mechanism of being able to get rid of a wacko president. And this is what this is all for. Now, here's the question I have. And this, because I didn't see this, or I didn't see the catalyst of this being Lyndon B. Johnson. But here we have a late amendment that was created that would actually allow for a bait and switch presidency. I'll be the first to tell you that I saw the Biden administration as a bait and switch so that we would be set up with Biden, and then next thing we know, there would be a switch over to Kamala by using the 25th Amendment. Now, don't think that this is outlandish, because in 10 years later, in 1977 or 78, Jimmy Carter created this CRA. What is that? The Community Reinvestment Act. And so when he created the CRA, that just sat there, sat idle. And, I mean, Jimmy Carter, you know, just kind of, it was a feel-good gesture to say we wanted to make sure that inner communities and inner city, you know, dwellings or inner city vicinages, you know, like communities within the inner city, they could have a protected right of being able to, you know, get money, get loans to be able to reinvest into their communities to, you know, help rebuild or revitalize their communities, the Community Reinvestment Act. Well, that just sat there, did nothing under Reagan, under Bush, H.W. Bush. Now, all of a sudden, when Clinton gets in office, all of a sudden, Clinton grabs this and runs with this. And he runs with this in, you know, after he's done NAFTA and so forth. And I'm going to get more into this on Friday. But the fact of the matter is, here's this thing called the CRA that was put into I don't even want to say law, but the Community Reinvestment Act by Congress, which was unconstitutional, right? Because it was an act just like the Civil Rights Acts and so forth. Fact of the matter is that here he planted something that it could be exploited down the road. And it was exploited. Now, my point is here, this amendment was written for a reason. This is a progressive era amendment so that they could do a bait and switch. So when we come back in our next episode, we're going to be focused on the bait and switch amendment, or the 25th Amendment. So, as you know, all things for a reason, right? And so sometimes they're for a good reason, sometimes they're for a bad reason. I'll let you decide. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.